in the limelight.
The Biden administration has struck an agreement with Mexico, Guatemala, and Honduras to temporarily increase border security in an effort to stop migrants from reaching the United States border. The agreement comes as the U.S. saw a record number of unaccompanied children attempting to cross the border with Mexico in March, and the latest number of Border Patrol encounters overall with migrants on the southern border with Mexico, just under 170,000 since March of 2001. The article you're about to hear has been written by staff at the British newspaper The Guardian. The piece is titled, Biden strikes international deal in bid to stop migrants reaching U.S. border. Stay with us for more. The Biden administration has struck an agreement with Mexico, Guatemala, and Honduras to temporarily increase border security in an effort to stop migrants from reaching the United States border. The agreement comes as the U.S. saw a record number of unaccompanied children attempting to cross the border in March, and the largest number of Border Patrol encounters overall with migrants on the southern border, just under 170,000 since March of 2001. According to White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki, Mexico will maintain a deployment of about 10,000 troops, while Guatemala has sent 1,500 police officers and military personnel to its southern border, and Honduras deployed 7,000 police and military to its border to disperse a large contingent of migrants there. Guatemala will also set up 12 checkpoints along the migratory route through the country. Security forces in all three countries have been frequently accused of using excessive violence against migrants and targeting them for extortion and robbery. A White House official said Guatemala and Honduras were deploying troops temporarily in response to a large caravan of migrants that was being organized at the end of March. The Mexican government announced an increase in security and its troop deployment last March. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said that the objective is to make it more difficult to make the journey and make crossing the borders more difficult. She added that the agreement was the product of a series of bilateral discussions between U.S. officials and the governments of the Central American nations. The increase in migrants at the border is becoming one of the major challenges confronting Biden in the early months of his first term. Migrants from Central America and Mexico are fleeing rampant corruption, organized crime, as well as hunger caused by failing crops and the impact of climate change. The right to claim asylum is enshrined in international and U.S. laws. Numbers grew sharply during Donald Trump's final year in office, but further accelerated under Joe Biden, who quickly ended many of his predecessors' policies, including one that made the asylum seekers wait in Mexico for court hearings in the United States. Previously, militarized attempts to prevent movement in the region have not reduced the number of people traveling north through Mexico, but instead forced migrants to take riskier routes through remote regions and exposed them to a heightened risk of robbery, rape, abduction, and death. Mexicans represented the largest proportion of people encountered by the U.S. Border Patrol, and nearly all were single adults. Arrivals of people from Honduras and Guatemala were second and third respectively, and more than half of the people from those countries were families or children traveling alone. President Joe Biden is facing an early political and moral test over how his government treats thousands of migrant children who make their dangerous journey to the United States alone. Officials say the number of people caught attempting to cross the U.S.-Mexico border is on pace to hit its highest number for 20 years. Single adults and families are being expelled under coronavirus safety rules inherited from Donald Trump. But a growing number of children, some of them as young as 6 years old, from Guatemala, El Salvador, and Honduras, are arriving at the southern border of the United States without parents or guardians. These minors are brought to Border Patrol facilities where many languish in cramped prison-like conditions for days on end. The fast-developing humanitarian emergency shows how Joe Biden's determination to break from Donald Trump's harsh crackdown in favor of a more compassionate approach has collided with the reality of finite resources and a broken system. Democrats have called the situation a challenge and a problem and blamed Donald Trump's legacy. Republicans have rushed to brand it the first crisis and disaster of Joe Biden's presidency. Under Donald Trump, unaccompanied children were sent straight back to Mexico. Joe Biden decided they should go to a Border Patrol facility and within 72 hours be transferred to the health department with a view to being placed with a family member or a sponsor. However, it has quickly become clear that the system is not fit for its purpose, leaving about 4,500 children stuck in facilities designed for adult men. Lawyers who have visited one such facility in Texas describe seeing children sleeping on the floor or under metal benches and being allowed outside for just a few minutes every few days.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
Self-purification is the most significant factor.
Imamat yek asl zinda ast dar tarikh Islam.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism. This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Javadi Amoli. Stay tuned.
الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
رخداد تلخی که اخیراً جامعه بشری را
I seek refuge with Allah from Satan, the outcast. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. The bitter events which have lately engulfed humanity, that is, the uninvited coronavirus disease, is in accordance with the absolute mercy of Allah.
دعاها این جمله در بخشای پایانی این کتاب شریف مفاتیح است که یا من سهود و
There's a famous dua at the end of the precious book مفاتیح الجنان which says Oh, the one whose name is a medicine and whose resemblance is a cure. These two statements are famous. This following third statement is very rational, logical, and measured. Oh, the one whose name is a medicine and whose resemblance is cure. Oh, the one who places cure or remedy within things based upon what you want. O Allah, in anything that you want, you place a cure and remedy. Your power of knowledge is unlimited. Your will is unlimited. Even before you say anything, the universe obeys you. Thus, it is by your will, needless of your words, that you are obeyed. The whole of existence obeys you as you will. It isn't necessary for you to speak. This is Allah. Therefore, we find that dua plays a decisive role, especially when you are addressing Allah.
امیدواریم ذات اقدس اله نزاع ما را جامعه ما را مخصوصا بزرگوار و بزرگان پزشکی ما را که در خط مقدم
We are hopeful that the exalted being of Allah protects our Islamic system, our society, and especially the greatly esteemed physicians who are on the front line of this danger, protects them from all harms and removes this disease and virus from humanity. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Javadi Amali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We'll leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat, or BAT 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
Axel Jawadi talks about the various keys of life and has brought about this book to be a companion for the very famous Mafatih al-Jinan, where one is a tool or the keys for paradise, and this book, of course, are the keys of life.
The Keys of Life, a program designed to tell you that what Islam gives you will help get you home with joy and faithfulness. So, well, listen to
The Keys of Life.
The world is a very, very big house, many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up, we must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. My name is Sheikh Zaid Al-Salami. A few years ago I started the course of wanting to commentate on a very important book that I believe is something that would be useful for everyone who reads it, and that is the book Mafatih al-Hayat, written by Ayatollah al-Uzma al-Sheikh Jawadi Amuli. Chapter 12 is the last chapter in part 1 of Mafatih al-Hayat, and Ayatollah Jawadi Amuli in this chapter discusses entertainment and healthy entertainment, things that we are able to do in our individual lives that would be a part of our, if we could say, recreation. That could be a hobby, that could be sport, that could be entertainment. But what are the boundaries that one needs to observe when it comes to these kind of things? And also, what is it that Ahlul Bayt alayhim wassalam have spoken about when it does come to something like what we call healthy entertainment or healthy recreation and sports? قال رسول الله صلى الله عليه وآله كل لهو المؤمن باطل. All types of entertainment is باطل, except إلا في ثلاث, except in three things. Of course, we need to understand this within the context. في تأديبه الفرس, in disciplining a horse, you know, in taming a horse. ورميه عن قوسه, in shooting arrows from their bow, from a bow, from your bow. وَمُلَاعَبَتِهِ إِمْرَأَتَهُ, and having intimate time with his wife. These kind of things are, this kind of lahu, this kind of entertainment, is something that is encouraged. فَإِنَّهُنَّ حَقٌّ, because these are, of course, positive rights as well. Now, we can also see that this example of entertainment with wife, I'm going to read another hadith that also Al-Tamattu' bil-Nisa, Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam, he says, لَهُ الْمُؤْمِنِ فِي ثَلَاثَةِ أَشْيَاءِ الْتَمَتُّعْ بِالْنِسَاءِ وَمُفَاكَهَةُ الْأَخَوَانِ. Fukaha means being joyful, being joyous. Al-tamattu' bin nisa means having entertainment with, of course, your wife. Wa salatul layl, and doing salatul layl. See, let's not forget that yes, there is number one, there is number two, but there's also number three as well, you know. And here the main focus is that your entertainment should not be only with others. Your entertainment, your joy, your happiness, your free time should also be with your wife. Imam As-Sadiq alayhi salam, because I just wanted to mention that point because it says, وَمُلَاعَبَتِهِ إِمْرَأَتَهُ. Yes, we understand that intimacy and what we call foreplay and this kind of sexual engagement with a person's wife, with one's wife is extremely important. Islamically, it's something encouraged and mustahab and recommended. But in this context, we can understand it to be something more than that, that a person should be more active with his wife in the sense giving more attention, making sure that, you know, his entertainment is not only with his mates, but also with his wife. Imam As-Sadiq alayhi salam says that even Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi used to attend sports games when it came to things like racing of horses, or when it came to things like archery as well. Innahu kana yahduru al-rami wal-rihan. And this is in Al-Kafi. Al-Rami means archery, and al-rihan here means, of course, horse riding, horse racing. Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi says, khayru lahwi al-mu'min. The best form of entertainment of a believer is as-sibaha. Is as-sibaha. Then Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi, he says that a good way for a woman to also have entertainment is al-maghzal. Al-maghzal means knitting. You know, of course, we can also understand that these things are also applicable to women as well. You know, it's encouraged for a woman, for example, to learn how to swim and to be active and things like that, as long as she keeps her dignity as far as her hijab, her modesty, her chastity, and things like that. And it was also approved of Islamically in that particular general sense.
Ayatollah Javadi Amoli, the author of the book Mafatihul Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatihul Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc. But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree. Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam, who has stressed out the reward for praying, has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
I'd just like to mention that here Ayatollah Jawadi reminds us that when it comes to something like rihan, that shouldn't be taken in the sense of gambling, because gambling is, of course, one of the major sins, Gambling will not bring about any kind of recreation. Gambling is no way entertainment. Gambling will never bring any kind of positivity to your life. Gambling will destroy you. Yes, it will give you that quick adrenaline. You will feel something very, very quick, but it's going to die down very, very soon, especially when you lose and then lose again and then lose again. And if you win, you're going to win, but you're also going to lose. And it will be void of any kind of barakah. You're going to not only destroy yourself, but you're also going to destroy everyone around you. Imam al-Rida, salamullahi alayhi, he says, wa'alam yarhamukallah, and remember and know, may Allah have mercy unto you. We're talking about the negative or the bad kind of entertainment. One of them is just gambling. وَعَلَمْ يَرْحَمَكَ اللَّهُ أَنَّ اللَّهَ تَبَارَكَ وَتَعَالَى, that Almighty God نَهَى عَنْ جَمِيعَ الْقِمَارِ, that Allah has prohibited all forms of gambling. وَأَمَرَ الْعِبَادِ بِالْإِجْتِنَابِ مِنْهَا, and He has commanded His creation to stay away from قِمَار, from gambling. وَسَمَّاهَا رَجِسَا, and God called, He referred to قِمَار, to gambling, as رَجِس, as an abomination. رَجِس is worse than نَجِس. فقال رجس من عمل الشيطان فاجتنبوه, that gambling is an abomination from among the works of shaitan, so stay away from it and avoid it. Walhamdulillahi rabbil alameen, wassalatu wassalamu ala sayyidina Muhammad wa alihi tahirin.
Driving past, walking fast to the field of dreams, hear the children's screams.
There Was the Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time. Memories fade like a dusty window pane, and you can't see your past no more. The only thing that remains is that feeling of warmth in your heart that will always be there, be there.
Limelight. Calls grow for U.S. President Joe Biden to end all U.S. support for Saudi Arabia, which is preventing food, medicine, fuel, and other aid from reaching starving Yemenis. Dear listeners, please stay with us for an article in this regard written by Jake Johnson Ryder. This article is titled Calls Mount for Biden to End U.S. Complicity in Starvation of Yemen. Here's more on this issue. A strike launched by Detroit-based anti-war activists in protest of the Saudi-led blockade of Yemen entered its 17th day on Wednesday, April 14th, as calls grow for U.S. President Joe Biden to end all U.S. support for the kingdom's deadly restrictions, which are preventing food, medicine, fuel, and other aid from reaching starving Yemenis. Iman Saleh, A 26-year-old Yemeni-American taking part in the hunger strike wrote in a Washington Post op-ed recently that the siege against Yemen not only has had a crippling effect on everyday life, but it is also compounding the ongoing conflict in the country, causing damage that exceeds even the violence itself in both scale and intensity. After days without food, I have lost much of my short-term memory. Day in and day out, I feel the physical burden of starvation that my people have endured for so long. But my pain cannot amount to that of Yemenis under siege, Saleh continued. I am starving, but I'm not being starved. I'm suffering, but I can choose to end that suffering, she added. Saleh and other members of the Yemeni liberation movement are demanding that Biden immediately cut off U.S. support for the Saudi blockade and pressure Riyadh to lift the restrictions. In February, Biden vowed to end U.S. assistance for all of the Saudi-led coalition's offensive operations in Yemen. But the president has been quiet on the blockade, which one analyst characterized as an offensive military operation that kills civilians. As Saleh and her fellow activists have rallied in the nation's capital in recent days to demand action from the Biden administration, a growing cohort of Democrats in Congress is showing solidarity with the hunger strikers and pressuring the White House to do everything in its power to bring about an end to the devastating land, air, and sea blockade. I do hope that those who are watching realize that the longer that you are all on a hunger strike, the longer that there are people actually dying in Yemen, Representative Ilhan Omar said in an emotional speech to demonstrators in Washington, D.C. recently. In a report released earlier this year, several United Nations agencies warned that 400,000 Yemeni children under the age of 5 could die of starvation this year without urgent humanitarian help as their country is ravaged by the coronavirus pandemic, strangled by the blockade, and bombarded by airstrikes from the Saudi-led, U.S.-backed coalition. The World Food Program estimated that 50,000 Yemenis are facing famine-like conditions, with 5 million a mere step away from this worst-case scenario. A further 11 million people are facing crisis levels of food insecurity, the organization said. In 2021, around half of all children under 5 in Yemen, that is about 2.3 million, are projected to face acute malnutrition. The people of Yemen are without water, without food, without electricity, Representative Jamal Bauman said in a video posted to Twitter. A child is dying every 75 seconds. Half of the country is starving because of the Saudi Arabian blockade. We need for Saudi Arabia to immediately lift the blockade and allow food and aid into Yemen. Every nation should be standing up and speaking out. President Biden, please demand that the Saudis lift the blockade and let us bring aid into Yemen, Bauman continued. People are starving, children are dying, and it's on us to do more and do better, he added. Yara Baden, an activist taking part in the hunger strike, echoed that message in an interview with Middle East Eye. At the end of the day, who is paying? It's the innocent people in Yemen who have nothing to do with anything that's happening, Baden said of the Saudi-led, U.S.-backed war on Yemen, which began in 2015. A and we are complicit. The United States is complicit. In the same February speech in which he pledged to end all American support for offensive operations in the war in Yemen, Biden also said that we are going to continue to support and help Saudi Arabia defend its sovereignty and its territorial integrity and its people. As Vox Alex Watt reported recently, some analysts believe Riyadh took that as implicit support for the blockade, even as the Biden administration has consistently expressed the free flow of fuel and goods into Yemen is critical. That may partly explain why Saudi Arabia has kept the restrictions in place, Ward noted. In March, for instance, CNN found that Saudi warships had kept all oil tankers from docking in port of Hodeidah since the start of the year. In a letter to Biden recently, nearly 80 House Democrats led by Representatives Rakana, Debbie Dingell, and Mark Pocan implored the president to use all available U.S. leverage with the Saudi regime to demand an immediate and unconditional end to its blockade, which threatens 16 million malnourished Yemenis living on the brink of famine. The Saudi blockade has long been a leading driver of Yemen's humanitarian catastrophe, triggering recent fuel shortages, inflation, and greatly reducing access to food, water, electricity, and transportation, the lawmakers wrote. Every day that we wait for these issues to be resolved in negotiations is another day that pushes more children to the brink of death.
IRIB English Radio presents The Month of Allah. Let's be with Hujjatul Islam Sayyid Abbas Razavian.
As I look to nature's beauty, dazzled am I, knowing everything calls on you, the Lord Most High.
Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen Wassalatu wassalam ala ashrafil anbiya'i wal mursaleen Sayyidina Abul Qasim al-Mustafa Muhammad Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad Wa ala ahli bayti al-tayyibin al-tahirin Wa la'natullah ala a'dahim ila qiyami yawmiddin I welcome you to the program Month of Allah. And as you know, there are many different titles and many different names for this month. This month has been titled as Shahrul Qiyam, Shahrul Siyam, the month of fasting, say the month of worshipping God. Shahrul Tuhur, the month that we purify ourselves. One of the names that I would like to speak about is Shahrullah, meaning the month of God. Of course, God does not have a physical time period that he is in. He is in no need of any type of physical space or time whatsoever. But when we say Shahrullah, the month of God, or when we say, for example, Baytullah, the home of God, it means that these things are attributed to God, that they are so magnificent, they are of so much splendor that Allah has attributed this time period to himself. So we are in Shahrullah, the month of Allah. Another name of this holy month is the Barakatul Shahrul Barakah, meaning that the month of Barakah. What does Barakah mean? Raghib Isfahani, in his Al-Mufradat, says that Barakah is when a camel comes and he sits and puts his chest on the ground. That is called the action of Barakah. meaning that he is now stable. So in Arabic, when we say something is barakat, it means that it's something stable, that something has istiqrar al khair, that its khair and good becomes everlasting. It does not run out. For example, somebody gives you money and that money has barakat, that money does not run out. It stays with you. So this month is a month of barakat, meaning that many of our actions, many of our deeds will be multiplied, will be increased. The khair of it, the good of it will be increased. For example, when we talk about sleep and the narrations it has that وَنَوْمَكُمْ فِيهِ عِبَادَةً, that even our sleep in this month is an act of worship. How many hours do we sleep a day? Some 6, some 8. So when you talk about sleep, Allah has increased the sleep and has turned it into ibadat for us, has given it barakat to that sleep. So have we ever worshipped Allah for 6 straight hours? Have we ever worshipped Allah for 10 straight hours? No. But in this month, that sleep that we have is 10 straight hours of worship. When we talk about our breaths, how many times do we breathe a day? Some have calculated that humans breathe about, say, 17,000, 30,000 times a day. How many breaths is that? And in the tradition, it says, أَنفُسَكُمْ فِيهِ تَسْبِيهِ, that your أَنفُسَكُمْ فِيهِ تَسْبِيهِ, that your breath is now tasbih and glorification. This is barakat. Allah has turned our breath into what? Into tasbih and glorification. So this is the month that Allah turns many of our normal actions into acts of worship. And one of those is the narration that we have about reciting the Quran. If we recite one verse in the holy of the Holy Quran in this month, it's as if you have read the entire Holy Quran. That is called barakat. So this is the month of barakat, that we recite one verse, it becomes as if we read the entire Quran. Our sleep becomes worship. Our breaths become tasbih and glorification. Therefore, we should take time and to notice that things will be multiplied exponentially in this month. We should take time away from our normal day-to-day routines and spend more time in worshiping Allah in this month, making dua and prayer, and coming to the Islamic centers that we have and worshiping Allah together. Wa sallallahu ala sayyidina Muhammadin wa ahl bayti tayyibin at-tahirin.
Welcome, O Ramadan. You are honored, O month of the Quran. It is Ramadan. O one who sleeps, stand up and declare the oneness of Allah, the oneness of Allah. O one who fasts, stand up in prayer at night, and Allah will forgive, Allah will forgive. Welcome, O Ramadan, you are honored, O month of the Quran, it is Ramadan.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Iran.
It was on Sunday when Iran's nuclear facilities in the central city of Natanz came under another Israeli attack. Israeli media cited intelligence sources as saying it was an Israeli cyber attack. Former Israeli Minister of Military Affairs Moshe Yalon said he hopes no one in Israel would take responsibility for the Natanz incident implicitly. Yalon said there are things for which silence is always beautiful. Spokesman for Iran's Atomic Energy Organization Behrouz Kamalvandi said the incident affected part of the electricity distribution network of Natanz. He said the attack caused no casualties or contamination, adding that investigations are underway into the matter. Iran's nuclear chief also reacted. Ali Akbar Salehi condemned the incident as an act of nuclear terrorism. He said the futile and desperate enemy move was aimed at blocking Iran's eye-catching nuclear progress. He called on the international community and the International Atomic Energy Agency to respond to the act of terror. Iran's foreign ministry also accused Israel of being the culprit behind the cyber attack on the Natanz nuclear facility, pledging that Tehran will take revenge. Foreign ministry spokesman Saeed Khatibzadeh slammed the Israeli sabotage act as an act of nuclear terrorism.
What happened in Natanz was a bold act of nuclear terrorism on Iranian soil. There has been no casualty or contamination reported, but it could very much resulted in a catastrophic situation. So it can be considered under the category of crimes against humanity.
Khatibzadeh said Iran reserves the right to respond in kind under Article 51 of the UN Charter. The spokesman noted that Tehran has started communications with international authorities in this regard. Khatibzadeh stressed that the incident at Natanz will not slow down Iran's nuclear program and will instead speed up the country's nuclear advancement. He said the centrifuges damaged in the incident were the IR-1 type and that they will be replaced with the most advanced centrifuges Iran has developed. The attack on the Natanz nuclear facility happens on the same day the U.S. Defense Secretary visits Israel for the first time in his capacity.
As a major strategic partner for the United States, our bilateral relationship with Israel in particular is central to regional stability and security in the Middle East. During our meeting, I reaffirmed to Minister Gantz, our commitment to Israel is enduring and it is ironclad.
For many, the visit might be carrying a message.
One has to assume, especially while the defense secretary is visiting Israel, because it would be hugely embarrassing. So the assumption has to be that the U.S. knew this attack was going to take place and did not say not to do it. Otherwise, there would have to be some kind of a protest by the United States to the Israeli government for doing it.
The attack on Natanz nuclear facility is not the first act of terror by the Israeli regime against the Islamic Republic. A blast hit a centrifuge assembly line at Natanz July last year, which Iran described as an act of sabotage. Head of the Israeli agency Yossi Cohen told the New York Times then that Israel had detonated a bomb there. In November 2020, prominent nuclear physicist Mohsen Fakhrizadeh was assassinated in a terrorist attack near the Iranian capital Tehran. This, as his name was mentioned multiple times in a presentation in 2018 by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, during which he repeated baseless claims about the Iranian nuclear energy program. Netanyahu described the scientist as a director of Iran's nuclear program and threatened, quote, remember that name, Fakhrizadeh. Apart from Fakhrizadeh, a number of other Iranian scientists have fallen victim to the Israeli terrorism. Ardashir Hosseinpour, Masoud Ali Mohammadi, Majid Shahriari, Daryush Rezai Nejad, Mustafa Ahmadi Roshan are all on that list. But as far as the Natanz attack is concerned, it came a day after Iran started up several cascades of advanced centrifuges in the facility. The incident also comes at a time when Tehran is holding talks with the remaining signatories to the Iran nuclear deal in the Austrian capital Vienna. The negotiations are aimed at removing the U.S. sanctions on the Islamic Republic.
Well, for Israel to do it at this time, the assumption, again, would be that they're trying to mess up those negotiations and make it hard for the United States to come to an agreement with Iran. You know, it'll be harder for the U.S., I imagine, to go back by taking off the sanctions.
All in all, what is almost certain is the fact that Israel will leave no stone unturned to hamper Iran's nuclear advancements by carrying out such acts of terrorism. The regime also tries its best to prevent the United States from reaching a deal with the Islamic Republic to remove the sanctions that have crippled the lives of millions of Iranians. But many are also pointing the finger at the U.S. in the case of the Natanz Sabotage Act and other terrorist attacks by the Israeli regime, arguing Israel doesn't commit such acts of terror without Washington's blessing.
A group of activists in the U.S. has held rallies in Washington, D.C. to call for an end to the Saudi-led war on Yemen. The activists from the Yemeni Liberation Movement have been on hunger strike since March 29th to call on the U.S. government to cease support for Saudi Arabia's siege on Yemen and draw attention to the plight of millions of Yemenis facing malnutrition and starvation. The protesters say what they're going through doesn't compare with the pain experienced by war-weary Yemenis, but it can raise awareness about the dire humanitarian situation in the Arab nation.
So, as someone who's part of Yemeni Liberation Movement, we believe in self-determination. So for the people of Yemen to determine for themselves the way that they want to live. And they're not able right now to make those decisions because they're actively and violently being starved by the U.S. government and by the Saudi-UAE coalition.
Experts say the fact that a growing number of people in the U.S., including politicians, are now demanding an end to the years-long war is a positive development, but not enough to end the conflict.
Everybody can imagine just how much your health and well-being is impacted. And I do hope that those who are watching and seeing realize that the longer that you all are on a hunger strike, the longer that there are people actually dying in Yemen.
But what steps can the international community take to ensure it can put an end to the deadly crisis? During his first foreign policy speech, U.S. President Joe Biden laid out his agenda for the Yemen conflict.
This war has to end. And to underscore our commitment, we're ending all American support for offensive operations in the war in Yemen, including relevant arms sales.
The announcement raised hopes that the Saudi hostilities against Yemen would end soon. But even that couldn't stop Saudis from keeping up their onslaught on the war-ravaged country. Although the Saudi-led coalition's war on Yemen escalated under former U.S. President Donald Trump with his administration's boundless support for the Saudis, the war began when Joe Biden was incumbent as a U.S. vice president in the Barack Obama administration.
I mean, I think Biden's silence speaks volumes, right? So since 2015, an administration that he was a part of, he's actively chosen billions and billions of dollars in weapon sales. Corporations have made billions and billions of dollars in sales, and they've decided that that money, right, is more important than the lives of Yemeni people. And it's more important than the child that dies every 75 seconds in Yemen.
Saudi Arabia, backed by the U.S. and its other regional allies, launched a devastating military campaign on Yemen in March 2015 with the goal of bringing Riyadh-backed former president Abdrabbo Mansour Hadi's government back to power and crushing the National Salvation Government. That goal has not been fulfilled thanks to the resistance put up by Ansarullah throughout 6 years of indiscriminate war and blockade. What Saudi Arabia is soon to be a short conflict turned to an all-out war, killing hundreds of thousands and displacing millions. Many observers believe that ending the war requires international pressure against Saudi Arabia and its regional allies, especially by their powerful partners, including the United States. But whether or not those nations' wider West Asia policies allow risking their ties with Riyadh is anybody's guess.
The latest round of talks on the 2015 Iran nuclear deal, formerly known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, ended in Vienna on Friday. The Austrian capital hosted 4 days of talks between delegates from Iran and the remaining signatories to the nuclear deal to revitalize the agreement. The U.S. also sent a delegation to Vienna, but Iran rejected to hold direct or indirect talks with them. Tehran and Washington remain in a standoff as both sides call on the other to take the first step to return to its deal-related commitments. While the administration of U.S. President Joe Biden says it wants to rejoin the JCPOA, so far it has refused to remove sanctions. The U.S. says it is prepared to lift sanctions that are inconsistent with the JCPOA. While it has declined to elaborate, that appears to exclude sanctions formally related to nuclear issues covered by the deal. Iran says since the U.S. unilaterally left the accord in 2018, it must first fulfill the obligation by removing all sanctions in a verifiable manner. That is, Iran is able to see the effect of the removal of sanctions in practice. Iran's foreign minister, Mohammad Javad Zarif, says Tehran is proposing a logical path to the U.S. for its full compliance with the nuclear deal. He called on the U.S. to return to full compliance first, and then Iran will reciprocate after verification of Washington's compliance. Zarif also stressed that all sanctions imposed by former President Donald Trump must be removed. Speaking to Press TV, Iran's top negotiator and deputy foreign minister, Abbas Araghchi, highlighted Tehran's stance on returning to compliance with the pact.
We only go back to full compliance when the U.S. has lifted all sanctions imposed or reimposed or relabeled after January 2017 and has verified by the Islamic Republic of Iran. Then we would go for full compliance.
The Iranian diplomat also rejected the idea of a step-by-step return to the 2015 nuclear accord. As the first round of negotiations finished on Friday, the participants agreed to hold another round of talks next Wednesday in the Austrian capital, Vienna. The negotiations are going to be about removal of sanctions and nuclear implementation of the deal.
We know that Trump's maximum pressure campaign failed against Iran. And Iran has emerged with an economy more resistant to external pressure and so insulated from the U.S. sanctions.
China has said the U.S. should return to the Iran nuclear deal unconditionally and remove all illegal sanctions against the Islamic Republic. In a tweet, the Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman described the U.S. unilateral withdrawal from 2015 nuclear deal as the root cause of the crisis. During the former U.S. administration of Donald Trump, Washington unilaterally left the JCPOA by calling it a weak agreement. Then Washington used the maximum pressure campaign to wage an economic war on Tehran to force it to renegotiate. The Iranian foreign minister, Mohammad Javad Zarif, previously said that unilateral sanctions imposed by the U.S. inflicted $1 trillion worth of damage on Iran's economy. He said Iran expects compensation after Washington rejoins the accord. A senior U.S. State Department official has predicted if Tehran insists on the removal of all sanctions imposed since 2017, Washington will reach an impasse.
Iran, in the current situation, has limited the negotiations to only two expert